Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Pony Sink for Wednesday, 28th of June, 2017. Hi, everyone. Sean and Paul aren't going to make it. Joe's going to be late or not make it, so we can get started. There aren't any RFCs that I need immediate discussion or none that are marked that way. Are there any that people want to talk about? All right, let's go to PR 1984. What a great issue number. Remove unnecessary allocation of full nodes in persistent collections. I'm confused only because this seems great and I don't know why it's marked needs discussion during sync.
I don't know either.
I think maybe Sean just wanted, it looks like Sean just wanted to make sure that we got this merged.
Yeah, I'll take the label off.
Cool. And indeed, it looks good. So let's squash and merge. There we go. Squash and merge. Excellent. All right. The next one is fix bug in as capture, which is both marked as needs discussion and do not merge, which is always a great combination.
Yeah. So I definitely do not think this is the right solution. I just want to say that immediately. It just... especially now that I've thought about it and I've found situations where it causes problems, but this has to do with the consume bang inside of the compiler, which currently allows you to, like, say, take a val and make it into a tran and modify it, which is not good.
No, that's very bad. Why is consume bang in there? That's the real question, which clearly Benoit is asking of me. And the thing is, if only I could remember. So the consume bang was supposed to go in there for some specific capture scenario. I think it's only supposed to ever show up in an as type. Oh dear, if only I could remember. So the only place it comes in, it gets added into the AST is in the sugar.c, right?
Yes.
And that comes in add as type. Which basically gets, I mean, the tuple. And other than that, it's just going in. Pattern root.
So I'm Sylvan.
Yeah.
What do you think about changing the as sugar as I'm suggesting in 1979? I'll put the link of the to the comment in the chat.
Okay. No, I've got okay. Cool. I've got 1979. Unsafe modification of vowel. Okay.
This one.
Thank you. Right. Right. It's be okay. Thank you. So that consume is because we're supposed to be getting it's because we don't want to, we're not introducing an alias in the as, even though we're building it out as a match.
I don't really understand why we are not creating an alias. Could you walk me through this?
No, I'm not sure I can. I think your solution looks good. So right now it's sugared as if there was an alias and as a special sort of magic unalias. Oh, it's because C can't match as C prime as an ISO. Because C prime introduces an alias to C. Right? So it'll only match it as a C ISO hat. That's why. Thank you for this excellent example.
Yeah, so maybe the solution would be to force consume on ISO and transition if they are operands of as.
Force consume.
Like we wouldn't be able to, for example, if C is an ISO reference,
uh-huh.
We couldn't do C as something. We should do consume C as something.
I don't think that's necessary because we're simply saying that as long as it's that type, we aren't introducing a new alias to C. Right? We're leaving C alone. So by having a temporary that is C as C ISO, we're not actually introducing an alias.
Yeah, but I don't understand why it's not creating an alias.
Because there's no new name introduced. There's no new binding.
Yeah, but you could assign the result of the as to a new variable.
Right, but then what you would get is an alias of C ISO, so you'd get C tag if you assigned it to a new variable.
That's right.
So the core problem... I think the core problem here isn't the match, isn't the way that consume bang is working. I think it should be rejecting OIC because of the way consume bang is it's not rejecting that match because it's seeing it as CISO bang son of a. Okay, I get it now. This is extremely good catch, Theo. I'm actually confused. Given the type of data, I think it should always print val push.
Yeah, it should. I was doing something pretty strange here.
Okay.
Like I know this example at the top shouldn't work as I expected.
Okay, cool.
That was okay, so luckily explained very well by Joe.
So really the problem here is that by saying we have this magic consume, we are screwing everything up. Because this thing is happily... When it expands it, we say that absolutely C-val is a subtype of C-iso-bang. Interesting. I almost wonder if the right thing to do is to code gen as directly and not try and sugar it as a match in the AST. And then type check it directly, so that C must be the type of the operand must be a subtype, a matchable type of CISO directly, and because then we don't introduce the alias. Does that make any sense?
I think so.
What do you think, Benoit?
Yeah, I'm still having trouble wrapping my head around it, but it sounds right.
Okay. Okay. In which case, yeah, 1981 isn't quite what we want.
No, definitely not.
Yeah. Actually, the more I think about it, the more it makes sense not to try to use the match. I wonder if now I can't think of any decent way that's going to make the type checker work this out, because it's just using match. It's always going to introduce an alias. There's just no way around it, which is why I have that crazy consume bang in there, which just doesn't type check correctly. Yeah, I think that's what we should do if everyone's okay with it. And it actually should be a fairly straightforward thing to handle in the expression pass. Possibly simpler than the sugar, actually. Okay, cool. Shall we look at 1844? This has been around for a while. I'm not sure what the status is on this.
Yeah, I don't know either.
We had talked about not trying to support every distro directly and asking for distros to have maintainers.
Yeah, I think we asked on the mailing list about somebody that could who could come up with an APK build and support Alpine.
All right. Which I don't know that we have that at the moment, right? There seems to be some. It's possible this is a little bit. Mixed in with some other changes because it's removing pthread attribute set affinity np. Is that actually not existent on this particular Linux? That seems very weird. That's a that's a Linux call. And geez, there's a few different things. I'm really not sure what the status is on this. I think I feel like it's not quite good to either close this out or to merge it in at this point. Anyone else have any thoughts? Okay. So let's look at 1788, which has also been marked. But I think it's actually. Right now, it would need some work because it's using the same 390 instead of 391. Or is this just changing where, is this change supposed to actually be changing how the download works?
I'm not familiar with LVM on Mac, so I don't know.
Okay. Well, I think let's add a comment here because let me just ping Kevin about this. All right, I've added a quick comment on that. Okay. The other one marked is 1575, which is the FFI interop stuff. I thought we'd settled on an approach. Joe has had asked for some changes and we talked about various ways of doing this. Particularly, we had a sync where we talked about the Rust approach to libc. Um, At this point, I'm a little uncomfortable even introducing this stuff to the standard library because I don't think we have a great solution right here. And I think that there hasn't been sufficient demand for a POSIX-like type solution that we want to commit to one in the standard library at this point. I don't know. I'm not sure. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah. I'll add a quick comment. Okay. Excellent. So I think we are on to issues. So the first one is 1991.
I'm not sure why that one is marked as neat discussion. I think somebody just has to dig into the compiler and see what's happening.
Okay, cool. Sounds good. Yeah, it looks like maybe this is interacting with exhaustive match in a funny way because thing is thing base or other things. And when we match on thing base and other things, we should theoretically be coming up with an exhaustive match. Yeah, so I agree. Okay, cool. 1987. So here we have...
This isn't so much an issue as just related to the bug in the as capture.
Okay.
Like, the solution I had there would remove all possibility of being able to do this thing here. So as long as that is fixed properly, then this isn't a problem.
Okay, because that should compile right there. In fact, that you don't even need to consume this. I see, because it looks like it's extracting it. Ah,
yeah, because the match adds an alias, so it can't work like this.
Yep, absolutely.
Which the as capture will fix once it's fixed.
Right, because you'll be able to do it without a match, and we'll be able to say foo as array i64 trend dot push one.
Yeah.
Yeah, perfect. Okay. In that case, maybe we close this one. What do you think?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll add a note.
I just don't understand why the match is seeing the field as a array e64 of tag. Because
it should be as an array i64 box, shouldn't it?
That is true. Yeah. Strange.
That is strange. What does it do if you just say foo as opposed to consume this foo?
Yeah, I think it should be box.
Yeah, it should be. I'm going to try that real quick just because, unless someone is already trying it. Ah, that's funny. My compiler says, just with the code right there, that it sees it as trend bang with no changes. Yeah, whether I do it with consume this.foo or not. So I wonder if there's been a change that I haven't built recently that's changed that. Is that possible?
I don't know. I was using the most recent compiler at the time, so.
Yeah, I might be a little bit behind because I've been working on a branch. Yeah. So actually, can you do me a favor, Theo?
Sure.
If this still says tag as opposed to trin bang on a current build, can we look into why it's doing that? Because it really shouldn't.
Yeah, I'll check that right now.
Awesome.
Yeah, it says trend bang.
Oh, good. Then I'm just going to ignore that output up there and pretend that everything's okay. All right, cool. Let's close that one. I love that. Let's have a look at 1983. That seg fault looks quite bad.
Hey guys, just to let you know, I just joined.
Hello. Hey, Joe. The sales. Description is quite good, extremely good. And it is indeed the same thing. Okay, I'm adding a comment. All right. Does that look good? I'm going to mark this as a duplicate. Take off and use discussion. It is high priority, but I'm going to close it if that's all right, since it's a duplicate.
I think there is another problem here.
Oh, is there?
So, because in the recover of... I link the comment in the chat. So in Liesel's first example here, foos equal recover valve foos end. So if we look at alias.c line, where is it? Line 77. When we're recovering a transition, we automatically set it as ephemeral, even if it's not consumed. But I think we should only do this if the transition was created inside of the recover expression.
Well, I think the issue there is we should not have access to foos inside that expression, since since it's a trin. Why do we have access to it? It shouldn't even exist. It should be out of scope. Ah, because it's seeing it as a box. Is that the issue? Because in you're right about line 79 and 81 theoretically, but we shouldn't even see it as a trin inside there if it came from outside. So are we seeing it? No, we shouldn't even be able to see it as a box. Inside that recover expression, we should be unable to see foos. That's a really good catch. Thank you, Benoit. Let's have a quick try of this, actually. Yeah, there's a problem. We seem to have access to transition stuff inside of recover expressions and that, and ref inside of recover expressions. Is it seeing them as tag?
Is it everything or only fields?
It's everything. But what it is that seeing it as a tag, which is actually okay to see it as a tag. So then the question is, foos equals recover val foos. Is indeed a problem on that complex type. Seeing it as a tag. All right, let's try string trin or string val, which is the issue, right? Right, because it drops the capability. Because trin or val is val. So I think that's actually okay. I think that recover val is actually fine, strangely. For all that. Yeah, that's okay. Because that foos is actually in his original example is a union of a transition and a val, which of course devolves to just a val. Does that make sense?
I think it's okay.
Okay, cool. Excellent. In which case, I will close 1983. Is that all right? Benoit, is that okay with you?
Closing the issue?
Yeah, 1983, because it's a duplicate of 1979.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, cool. Oops. There we go. Okay, great. Next one is 1980, strange if-type error and crash.
I just was taking a look at this while you guys were working through that one.
Awesome.
I mentioned that the compiler error actually makes sense. His first version that creates an error, obviously the crash is not something that we want, but the compiler error makes sense when it says I64Val is not a subtype of array of I64Val hash send viewpoint I64Val. So as I was explaining in the comment,
Because send can be tag. Yeah.
And tag can't view anything, so tag I64 is not, or I64 is not a subtype of tag I64.
Right.
And maybe the compiler is crashing because the viewpoint code doesn't handle tags very well right now, like, because a tag viewpoint is kind of nonsensical.
Right. It's a bottom type. It's something that nothing can ever be.
Right. So maybe the compiler's freaked out about that.
Paul has been talking about introducing a bottom type, an uninhabitable type, to cover some of these situations. And more and more, I think he's right, and we should do it. That's a really interesting point. Thanks, Joe.
You said a bottom type is what I should call that in this comment?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. The tag viewpoint on anything is the bottom type. It's something which there is no possible value, but it is sort of a type, right? Like it's the type for which there is no possible value. And all bottom types can be treated the same by the compiler. It can just say, oh, that's bottom. Okay, cool. You can't ever use that. So if you tried to call a function that needed a bottom type, there'd just be nothing that could ever fulfill it. And we could even do all kinds of things, like have nice errors if something was a bottom type, if we wanted to, things like that.
Okay.
Cool.
So, I'm adding that comment as well, and move on to the next one.
Awesome. So, 1973, which is the operator precedence about unary and infix operators. By the way, I'd like to just make sure that it's, in case anyone doesn't realize it, I actually really like this issue. I'm really pleased that Dipin brought this up, because I think questions like this are important. A lot of times when we've been programming for a long time, we get really steeped in ideas, and that we really take for granted things like unary versus binary binding, or even the whole idea of expression binding, right, is kind of absurd for people who are, and I don't want to even say just getting into programming. Dipin is actually an excellent programmer. He's just not steeped in PL like some of the rest of us.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing. It's kind of a domain of thinking about programming that isn't necessarily, like, it's much more abstract than how other people think about the code that they're writing.
Exactly. Exactly.
And you could lose sight of what is actually intuitive.
Completely. And I think this has been an excellent issue and super worth discussing. And I really meant it of maybe there is some other thing we should be doing, right? Like, I don't want to say that there isn't, other than white space changes binding, which I'll just freak out and jump out of a window. But other than that, I think it's interesting. And of course, S expressions, that old canard, does in fact solve this utterly. It just makes everything else tragically unintuitive. But it does solve all of these precedence issues extremely straightforwardly. And I think would make sense to dip in based on what he's been describing, which I think is interesting.
Yeah. I'm kind of at a point where in the context of this conversation, like, one of the things that I ran across is that I can't think of a language that that doesn't bind unary stronger than binary. There probably is one, but I can't think of one that I use regularly. And so it seems intuitive to me for that reason, I guess. And I'm not really sure that we should try to deviate from that just because.
I agree with you. I think the right response is that we will, in fact, leave unary and binary binding the way it is. I just think it actually has been an excellent discussion. In fact, I'm going to leave a comment on there about that.
Yeah. Another thing that I think somebody brought up, there's a lot here. I don't know who it was. Sorry, I'm forgetting. But R. Urban said that the fact that we use the word not instead of an exclamation point, as some other languages use, might be one of the things that kind of visually cues people in languages where exclamation point preceding an expression is not, that might be one of the things that visually cues people into the fact that it binds really close, like a minus sign. So that's something to think about. I don't necessarily think we should use exclamation point for that. In fact, I think I like the word not for that use, but that might be kind of explain some of the counterintuitiveness, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's funny when we talk about intuitive, because of course, as I was just writing in this comment, it's not. None of this is intuitive to anybody. It's all learned experience, and it's about where we're coming at it for learned experience. Like a C programmer is going to see bang and think it means not and think it binds tightly. On the other hand, a C programmer is going to look at bang in front of an integer and think that it will turn 73 into zero.
Yeah.
And we'll expect a tilde to do what not does in Pony. Intuitive is one of those strange things.
And I guess to wrap this up from my perspective is what I think we should do for this issue ticket to call it closed is probably just make sure that something gets added to the tutorial that talks about this in some way. And just brings it up so that, because it was definitely, I found it surprising that Dipin and Sean both found it surprising as like both very experienced programmers, but also very experienced Pony programmers.
Yeah.
And just that something could go this long without being noticed by somebody who's we've been programming Pony in their day job is something that I think we may have failed from a documentation standpoint.
Yeah, I agree. All right. I just slapped a comment on there. See if you think that covers it.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, cool. All right, I'm going to change it from these discussion during sync to bug ready for work. Difficulty easy. Because it's a documentation change. But it's definitely a documentation bug, which I think is cool. Okay. Next one is 1972. Ah.
So the problem on that one is that Sylvan, do you remember?
I do.
Yeah, the rules that George Sid came up with.
Indeed.
So the problem here is that we're not giving any details on what the compiler is doing when it's recovering tuples like this.
Yeah.
So I think the main issue here, aside from the fact that it's a bit too restrictive, is that I think we should come up with a way to add more details to the error.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But I'm not really sure how we would do that.
Yep.
Maybe a possibility will be to attach some kind of deferred error to an AST, and when we encounter a real error, we'd add the information attached to the AST to the error.
That's very interesting.
I'm not sure how that would look like.
Yeah, me neither. But it's an interesting idea. The idea of deferred errors to let us accumulate valuable information.
Yeah, I've been thinking for some time that we need like a first class way in the compiler to represent things. We've been using the construct of like this would be possible if,
uh-huh,
as a way to give more context to an error and provide more direction. And I think having more of those in more places would be great. And I don't know exactly how, but I think we need a first class way to represent that kind of construct.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
I would note that when I went back through, one of my early contributions to Pony was to make the errors list not be a global, but be a class that you carry around. And so with that, we do have the possibility now of you can pass an errors class down into the stack and then accumulate errors on it and then decide whether you actually want to emit them or not, or if you want to like pass them on to another errors class or suppress them, or I forget what the options I gave were, but we have this concept of carrying errors in a container that we might be able to leverage for that.
That's really interesting. So would you guys mind adding a little commentary on this? Because I think that's quite useful.
Okay. Do you want to do it, Joe, or should I do it?
I'll let you do it. I think you might have a better idea of what needs to be done.
All right, cool.
Okay, so I'll add a comment.
So we've been knee deep in a bunch of good stuff. It is we've got 10 minutes left. So before we run out of time, I want to make sure that everybody's got a chance to bring up what they want to bring up. Does anyone have anything they want to cover? George, Benoit, Theo, Joe?
Did you guys talk before I got here at all about F-bounded polymorphism and self type and all that good stuff?
Not yet.
Okay. I don't know if there's anything more to discuss on this call than other than what we kind of talked about asynchronously.
Well, there is, actually, which is that I have suspected for some time, and so have people much cleverer than me, like Sophia Drosopoulou and the people who wrote the Shapes and Materials paper, that F-bounded polymorphism itself is fundamentally wrong. And that there perhaps are better ways to go about this. So when I say the Shapes and Materials paper, let me get a link. It's called Getting F-Bounded Polymorphism into Shape, and it comes out of Cornell. Is that the right one? Is that the Shapes and Materials one? That's one of the Shapes and Materials ones. There's a collection of work about this stuff. You'll also note that a lot of times when people talk about F-bounded polymorphism, you'll see them refer to it as effing bound polymorphism, and there are good reasons for that. So let me post a link here and also in Slack. So self-types are really hard. And if you're interested in self-types, it's really good to read some of Kim Bruce's work on self-types. He spent a long time researching self-types and producing it ends up producing a completely different notion of subtyping than substitutability, which is the Barbara Liskov approach. And there's a reason that even Kim Bruce's language, the one that he works on with Andrew Black and James Noble, which is called Grace, does not use self-types. They're really difficult. Paul does point out that there are some times when you can have a return type that's self, and we could investigate that and figure out exactly where it's sound and where substitutability works. The other issue is anyone that wants to start, that wants to have a look reading the shapes and materials stuff, and anyone has some thoughts of how that might usefully apply to Pony, I would be super interested in that. I'm not saying that their approach is what we want to do, but I think it's possible it should influence us. Sorry, I hope I'm not rambling too much there.
No, it's good to have the context. I can say that every time I've wanted to use it, it was a return value.
Interesting.
And I have to say, in the case of the return value, that this is actually possible currently, and I've done it a couple times recently. Which is actually, you do this strange thing where you have an interface, and as one of the type arguments, you have the constraint of like the same interface, the name of the interface, which contains, you know, the same like type variable V or whatever, and you just return that type, that variable.
And then you've bound to that, and there you go.
Yeah, and that's used in a lot of places in the standard library, including for integers and floating points. That need that. I think it works well when it does work. I've run into some cases, and I think Benoit has run into some cases where that approach falls short in various ways. For me, the cases where it fell short could have been solved alternatively. So rather than using a self-type, it could be solved alternatively by being able to look at, I forget what terms we were using talking about this when we last mentioned it, but being able to talk about, if I have, it was bivariant, the bivariant type of a generic type, where I have methods that are, that are the same. So this is not solving the F-bounded polymorphism problem, but it's like a different path of solving the problems I've run into where I've wanted to reach for a self-type. And that's like having a way to talk about an array of anything. For example, if I want to call like the size method on an array,
You really don't care what it's an array of.
Yeah, there is an interface, and so I could create an interface, right? I could create an interface that has the size method in it, and I could kind of enumerate all those, but shouldn't the type system be able to do that for me if I just say, array of anything, I'm not putting any constraints on, any further constraints on the type parameters that are involved in the generic type.
Yeah.
And so if anything that could have resulted from something that's within those, the original constraint.
Yeah. Yeah. So that also gets into the issue of higher kinded types as well.
Right. I think that's what you were referring to when I brought this up last time.
Yeah. And there's some open questions about how much of higher kinded types would we need in order to do that kind of stuff. Maybe not that much, actually. And maybe it even wouldn't be that hard to do higher kinded types in Pony. I haven't sat down and thought it through. The framework is in place to do higher kinded types in terms of the style of type system that we have, but that doesn't mean that the implementation would turn out to be good. And there may be issues, there might not be, but there may be issues with reference capabilities and higher kinded types in terms of how those things are plugged in. On the other hand, maybe not. Yeah. That's very interesting. I like that we still have new type system stuff coming up. Even now, it's fantastic. All right, cool. So Joe, I think you particularly might like the shapes and materials paper. It's pretty digestible, I find. I think you'd have no trouble.
I don't like indigestion.
Yeah. Indigestion, it turns out, is not my favorite result from a paper, and yet it's often what happens to me. And so if you have a chance to go through it, I know you're super busy at the moment. So, you know, whenever that happened to happen, I would love to hear your thoughts on it.
I'll do some light bedtime reading.
Yeah, there you go. All right, that takes us to basically the end of our time. Is there anything that anybody wants to bring up before we go?
Yes, it's just a quick pre-RFC announcement or discussion. So, what would you think of having authority like ambient auth or net auth directly in the type system with something akin to exception signatures, but with authority signatures?
Well, that's interesting.
My idea would be to basically allow more a finer-grained control on things like FFI. So, for example, have a new kind of types, which will, for example, be authority, and a given authority would allow to call some list of C function, and basically any type or any function that would have access to an authority would be able to call the associated FFI function.
So you know what we could do, actually, possibly without changing the type system, but I'm not sure, is if you packaged up those FFIs in a primitive, but instantiating that primitive required authority, then you can instantiate the primitive with authority, but make the individual calls without requiring the authority. And then, in fact, you would have the ability to pass around the ability to make those calls without the whole authority, separate from the authority, because you could pass around the primitive itself once you'd instantiated it.
I was thinking something kind of along the same lines. Is FFI the main area of concern that you wanted to do this for, or is there something else that you wanted to also handle?
Yes, I have something else that I'd like to handle with that. So maybe I'm going to say something kind of heretic, but I want to allow pointer usage directly in Pony.
Oh, that's interesting. In order to do pointer arithmetic for speed over some operations?
The idea would be to avoid, for example, some overhead on calling a C function, make inlining more easy to use, because it's trivial to inline a Pony function, but it's more difficult to get the build system right to inline a C function inside of Pony code.
Okay.
And also to take advantage of the better alias analysis in Pony.
So I think it's interesting. I've thought about this a little bit before, about one. I really want to reach for a pointer right here, sort of thing. I think we could also maybe do it with object capabilities in the same way, where to do any, like right now, all of the interesting operations on pointer are all private. And maybe instead of being private, they should require a capability that comes in like an object capability that comes in via the env when you start your program, and you have to pass it in just like netauth or any of these other pieces, and it would be required for like the constructor of a pointer or from anything that mutates a pointer, or all the things that are private right now would, instead of being private, they would require this object capability to be given.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also another point for having the authority on the signature instead of as a parameter is that passing a parameter has some cost, but it's small, but it's there anyway. And also I think it could have less impact on a refactoring to have it on a signature that, rather than on a as an argument, because then you only have to change the signature and not all the individual calls.
So I hate to say the thing, but I'm going to say the thing, which is, I think what you actually want there is not a signature change, but implicits. Which is to say that would actually allow you to apply this approach to other things as well, like logging and other kinds of dependency injection-like mechanisms. There's some interesting tricks we could do with the compiler side of being able to align stuff when you have a capability, or really when you have any argument that is in fact unused by the caller. We could have the compiler, once it's type checked, we could have the compiler leave out that argument at the call site and at the caller. I think that would be a nice optimization. But also, implicits would let you manage the API change extremely easily, in the sense that you wouldn't have to change any of the call sites. As long as it was in scope and the compiler could find it, it would automatically pass it in. That said, implicits are complex, and I think Martin Oderski's research on implicits is still progressing, and I still think he's still making things better. I think the original Scala implicits, I personally find extremely difficult to work with, both in terms of using them and in terms of being able to trace through code and figure out what's going on. But he's doing more research on them, and maybe there's something we should look into. I think there's also has been some work on static implicits, which is to say compile time implicits. But I think if we were to have implicits and being able to align unused variables, it would essentially give those to us.
Actually, I'm not sure we need to do that ourselves.
Okay.
Because if you look at my pull request 19, 1917, so just for context, currently every pony function every compiled pony function in LLVM is marked with the equivalent of static.
Right.
So, but the LLVM is able to elide implicits on static methods, because it knows that
it was unused.
Yes.
And it can trace that's excellent.
Yeah, and currently it can do that on pony programs, because every function is
goes in the darn V table.
Yes. So the good news is that the bug that's blocking that will probably be fixed in LLVM 5.
Great.
And while looking at code compiled with that change, I observed that a lot of things are elided, either because they are not used, or because the same argument is used in every call to the function. And
wow,
actually,
that's fantastic.
It's the eliding that's causing the bug.
Okay, cool. I'm afraid we have to wrap up. We've got to hand the Zoom account back to the rightful owner. Thanks, everybody. This has been a particularly good one. Benoit, I'm quite interested to see what you think of implicits and whether we can do it with implicits instead of type signatures. Similarly, anyone's endpoint on F-bounded polymorphism would be fantastic. Anyway, thanks again, everybody, and see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.